This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples. We're here on Seminole Sports Radio, a VSporto channel. And just a reminder, you can always subscribe to this podcast through iTunes, your podcast manager of choice, or you can listen to us on Seminole Sports Radio from VSporto and listen on your mobile devices using the Seminole Sports Radio app available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And of course, if you're enjoying the podcast, it's always helpful. Leave feedback, leave five-star reviews, leave some comments. Definitely helps us move up in the podcast rankings. Plenty to talk about here. Florida State had their spring game 6 days ago. We've been a little bit swamped here trying to get things taken care of on our end, and also making sure that we've got some things broken down to say about the spring game. I'm gonna do a little bit more in-depth stuff here next week about the FSU spring game and some of the more detailed things that I've seen. I'm just going to do a quick overview in this episode. And then in the next episode, I'm actually also going to have Wayne McGahee III from NoleDigest.com join me as well. And we're going to talk a little bit more back and forth about what we saw in the spring game. So lots of stuff still to come here on the Florida State spring game. What we saw, questions basically that still remain going into the fall. A lot of questions were answered, though. A lot of questions were answered, and generally speaking, in very positive fashion in the spring game, which of course was played in Orlando in the Citrus Bowl, in the very stadium where they're going to be opening the season against Ole Miss, which of course is helpful because, you know, these players, particularly DeAndre Francois, if he winds up being the starting quarterback like I expect for that game, he's now got some experience playing in that stadium. So that's a pretty big deal moving forward. But let's go ahead and get right to it. I mean, this was just a really encouraging overall day from the Florida State program. Before we go into any more discussion, it's always important to caveat any discussion of a spring game with a reminder that it is a spring game. And spring games, particularly when you divide it up the way that Florida State did, or in the case, you know, what you had in Gainesville, Florida went ones versus twos. Anytime you're not going good on good across the board, the takeaways that you can get are going to be limited. So, you know, Florida's one offense, without any real surprise, put up over 40 points on their two defense. Well, okay, that doesn't really show much. It basically just allows the ones to get a little bit more confidence moving into the fall, and it's a nice show for the fans, but it doesn't really show a whole lot. Similar thing in this setup. One of the things that, you know, the coaching staff likes to do about this setup for Florida State is that they like to see where these guys go in the draft. They like to see who the seniors value. They like to see who, you know, what the various players think of each other as a way to kind of keep their finger on the pulse of, you know, well, you know, are you taking this guy earlier because he was a lot of trouble for you, or is it, you know, that you don't trust his backup? What they want to get a sense of what the seniors who have a good sense of who's good and who's not. I mean, the players know who's good and who's not. The coaching staff wants to get a good sense of who trusts whom on this team, which is a nice piece, nice reason to divide things up this way. The other thing is that in terms of quarterback preparation and some of these other things, it's a pretty fair shake. So, you know, a guy like Malik Henry is playing with a group that's fairly comparable to the group that DeAndre Francois is playing with. And I will caveat that slightly. I do think Francois went against a slightly better defense in terms of the secondary overall. I mean, the defense that that Francois was going against had Derwin James, Nate Andrews, Tavares McFadden, Hoskins, Nottie, and Josh Sweat on that team. So a little bit more of the ones, a little bit more, a few more of the ones, or you know, the guys with experience in the secondary. So pretty close, but again, it's you're not dealing with such disparate matchups across the board that you can't compare a little bit, and that's one of the nice things about dividing it up this way. In any case, one of the things that really stood out right away is that this team has improved. It has gotten better since last year. And the question is, how much better is it still going to get? But particularly that defense, oh man. We didn't see the one defense altogether. But what we did see is players at some of the potential question mark positions. That second corner spot, the linebacker position, defensive end, backup defensive tackles, these sorts of things. We got to see some of those players in action, and this defense is going to be filthy good. I mean, this is Derwin. First of all, Derwin James is as we know, a freak, but this defense is going to be elite. They've got difference makers at all three levels, and that's one of the things you look at in terms of determining whether or not a defense has a chance to be elite. You need difference makers at all three levels. You got to have them on the line. You got to have an elite lineman. You got to have an elite linebacker, at least a quality linebacker that you know can make some plays, make a difference. And then you got to have at least one really quality defensive back. They've got more than that. They've got difference makers at all three levels. And actually, Derwin James is a difference maker by himself at all three levels. But this defense is going to be... There's no reason that this defense will not be elite. And I think we thought that coming into the spring. But, wow. I mean, one of the first things that stuck out in this game is how good the defensive backs are. And, you know, we talked about this throughout the spring, that our various sources, I'd been hearing that that opposite corner, that Lewis and McFadden had looked really good, that maybe Marcus Lewis had looked even a little bit better than Tavares McFadden, which was saying a lot because McFadden is clearly a very talented player. And, you know, I've been told Florida State's going to be able to single cover pretty much any pair of wide receivers in the country. You'll remember me saying that in our last episode. Well, what we saw validated that. We saw Marcus Lewis one-on-one with Florida State's top wide receiver, Travis Rudolph, who has gotten tremendous reviews all spring. And we already know, you know, he's a quality player. And Lewis really won that matchup. Now, yes, you've got some inexperienced quarterbacks throwing there, but Lewis won that matchup. Gave up what, two catches for 18 yards? That's saying a lot. And again, it's not even about the stats, because again, let's get away from stats in a spring game. It's about looking at what we saw. I mean, he's a guy that was in Travis Rudolph's pocket the entire time. This is a guy who is big enough to press and to be physical, and he was physical coming up against the run, and still fluid and flexible enough and explosive enough to stay in the hip pocket of just about anybody. That's just a big deal. And then of course McFadden on the other side was no slouch either. Did give up a touchdown late to Auden Tate. But the coverage was fine there. Sometimes the guy makes a good play, and that's something Jimbo Fisher talks about. It's okay. Somebody's going to lose. Somebody's going to get beat on every play. But if you get beat making a good play yourself, and the other guy just makes a better play, then that's what you're hoping to see when you're playing yourself. When you're playing in these spring game environments, you want to see guys making good plays by beating other guys making good plays. We saw a lot of that in this game, in my view. Now, just in terms of immediate takeaways, again, the first takeaway for me was that defense is going to be elite. It's going to be even better than last year's defense was. And I think if anything, if the national championship game proved anything or showed anything, It's a Florida State's defense was pretty close to a championship unit last year. You look at what Clemson did against that Alabama defense and what they did against the Florida State defense at home. And that Florida State defense that was a pretty good defense last year. And this defense is going to be a significant amount better. Of course, you know, provided, you know, absent horrible injury luck and so on, but it's going to be a better defense. The second immediate takeaway is that the offense has taken a nice step forward. Line of scrimmage looked better. Still had, I think, two motion penalties, which still pretty frustrating. And we'd been told they basically had almost none all spring. They got under the lights. There are a couple. Can't have that, but they are, that is a whole lot better than like six, which, as I recall, they had five or six against Georgia Tech last year. So, you know, incremental steps there. But the line of scrimmage looked better. And there were players that looked like they were taking some nice steps forward. Some young players that needed to step up on offense for the offense to have a good year that looked like they've really made some progress. In terms of players who stood out to me, and I'm going to get into a little bit closer breakdown in the second segment here, but just and also more of a detailed breakdown on the next couple podcasts. But players who stood out to me jumped off the screen to me. Ryan Green, without question. I've been told, you know, you'll recall a prior podcast. I've been told he was playing well, but wasn't special. And while he might not be special, he played awfully well. He's at this point, he played like the number two. He played like a guy that you can have as a reliable number two for Dalvin Cook and not feel bad about not giving Dalvin Cook too much of the load. First of all, Green is fast. I mean, he got the edge a couple times running away from some guys where I was surprised because he easily ran away from guys. But the thing that stuck out to me most about Green is how physically he ran. And we'll get to that in just a moment. Other players who stood out the most, Wally Aimee. He's instant impact, and he's instant impact at two positions, which is really needed given the move of Rick Leonard, which looks like it's going to stick. Auden Tate, obviously Tate had an excellent day, working both against walk-ons and scholarship guys. Most impressive thing is the way he caught the football with his hands and the way that he presented a big target and was really Francois' security blanket all afternoon. And that's a big deal. Again, that's what Florida State lacked last year in terms of that big wide receiver who could be that. And he gives that. He's going to be a difficult cover for anybody because of his size. And if he's able to catch the ball efficiently and present that big target, that'll go a long way towards Jimbo Fisher being willing to play a younger quarterback because you've got more margin for error there. Talked already about Marcus Lewis. Ryan Izzo was another guy that really stood out to me. Again, his chemistry with Francois was a big piece of that. Maven Saunders also on the other side of the field as a pass receiver again stood out in working with Henry, but Izzo stuck out in terms of his ability to do all the things that you need to do as a quality tight end in this offense. So that's a big deal. In any case, those are all places, you know, running back, defensive line, wide receiver, cornerback, and tight end. Those are all places where we came into the spring with some question marks. And those question marks were answered with positive results from all five of those guys who stuck out during the spring game. I'm going to take a quick break. Going to come back in a moment with basically rehashing. I've given some things to watch going into the spring game. We're going to talk a little bit about basically what we saw in watching those things in the spring game in the next segment. Be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast. Once again, I'm Jason Staples. Before, on our last podcast, in the podcast before the Florida State spring game, I'd given a few things to watch in that spring game. First of all, obviously the quarterbacks, the interior offensive line and defensive line. I wanted to see how the offensive line, particularly at the center position, held up what Wally Imei would look like, how Rick Leonard would look, you know, some of these questions. The linebackers, wide receivers, and running backs, we wanted to see all of those. Those were our five real things to watch in the spring game. Well, now we've seen the spring game. Let's talk about what we saw. Starting again with the obvious, let's start with the quarterbacks. And again, I had the proviso before we saw the spring game, we had to keep in mind that the quarterbacks would be facing vanilla looks. And that's basically what we saw. We didn't see a whole lot of movement from the defense, didn't see a whole lot of pressure looks. There were some situations where it looked like it would have been a sack. There's one where Derek Nnadi pulled up on what would have almost certainly been a sack. But, you know, again, they're giving the quarterback some opportunity to actually make plays. So you got to take all of this with a grain of salt in that regard. But there's no doubt that both quarterbacks, and, you know, again, we're not really going to talk about J.J. Cosentino on this, mainly because he just hasn't developed. Thanks for playing, J.J. Much respect for coming down from Pittsburgh, but it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. And, you know, it's nothing against the kid. It just, he 0-for-4 in the spring game and just doesn't look like the light bulb has really gone on all this. And he's been passed. I mean, Malik Henry is ahead of him. If, you know, worst came to worst, Malik Henry's going to go on the field before J.J. Cosentino at this point. In any case, we'll talk about Francois and Cosentino. First things first, Francois, I thought, looked pretty good. There were some after the spring game who were critical of Francois, particularly in with respect to the couple interceptions, and he did have that one fumble that then Jimbo Fisher overruled by fiat. But at the same point, and one of the main criticisms, in addition to a couple of the turnovers, which, you know, the interception to that he threw, the first one to that Nate Andrews undercut. It's actually the right decision. He was just a beat late, and he threw that ball too flat. You got to throw it high and give your 6'7 tight end a chance to go up and get it. And if he doesn't, then you throw it out of the end zone. That's something you learn on. That's okay. The second interception was a misread you can't have. But again, that's something that this is where you you've got to determine. You know, you got to learn over the course of the summer. Make sure that you don't miss underneath coverage on that stuff. Actually, that was the same play, by the way, that they'd run the prior play, and he'd thrown Bobo Wilson into Josh Sweat, and I think he was trying to make sure that he took advantage of what the look had been on the prior play and sort of predetermined where he was going and just didn't see the underneath coverage. You can't do that. But, you know, the bigger criticism that I saw from some is that Francois didn't really lead guys in sort of throwing them open in some cases. And that's true. And that's more or less true with a few exceptions, particularly in the first half or three quarters of the game. Once they actually went to 2 minute, it was interesting to see how much more comfortable Francois got. Yes, he did have that one fumble. But once they went 2 minute, you could see him sort of establish a little bit of a comfort zone, and there were some throws that he made where he did throw some guys open, and there were some throws that were really sweet. I mean the late touchdown that he threw to Auden Tate was Jimbo Fisher mentioned Tate ran the wrong route there, so it was not only a really good adjustment by Francois recognizing that his first read had run the wrong route and not panicking, but then throwing a good ball to the proper spot that gave the defensive back no chance. That's the kind of throw that he brings to the table that not many guys can make. And he made another deep throw down the middle to Izzo, which was terrific. The slant to Izzo, which was a little bit risky, throwing it through again underneath coverage, but it was such a laser, it's unlikely to get picked. And, you know, that was the proper read, even though the defensive coverage was more or less there. It was the proper read. And there is a certain point where he's a guy, if he needs to pick and pop, he can really pick and pop. He's able to put the ball into spots. The real question is, how can he develop his imagination and his anticipation a little bit over the course of the summer? One thing that he may want to consider is, in certain cases during the summer, to actually close his eyes. And this is really counterintuitive, but it is a drill that is good to develop. And for those of you who have, you know, kids and this sort of thing, who are playing quarterback or whatever, this is a decent drill to develop anticipation for young players. You're running through the basic route, and when you hit the back of the drop and you're about to throw, you close your eyes so that you have to throw to where you think the receiver is going to be. And that's the sort of thing that I think, you know, may help him, that sort of thing, over the course of the summer. There's some things that he can do to get just a little bit further along on that. But overall, I was very pleased with what I saw from Francois. One thing that stuck out, obviously, was his mobility, his ability to run, a natural runner. You know, he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's going to give people problems. And, you know, that's actually one of the big reasons that I expect for him to win the job. In the season, you know, Sean McGuire can't move. And that's even before coming back from a pretty severe, pretty nasty ankle injury that still has him in a boot. McGuire's not mobile. So that's one thing that's a huge thing that Francois brings to the table. And it's one of the things that once you get to the season, I think if Francois does win the job, he's going to be told in some cases, take off. If you don't see what you like, just take off. And I think there were a couple of those cases in this spring game where that was basically what he'd been told, is take the read. If it's not there and you see man underneath or whatever, then go. And he did that and had some success, had a couple big third down conversions with his legs. And that's something that if a young quarterback is mobile, it can expedite the learning process, how quickly that quarterback can get on the field, because it does force defenses to simplify a little bit. And it also simplifies things for that young quarterback, because if he doesn't like what he sees, he can just take off. And again, he's not a danger to create a lot of sacks and so on by trying to create things with his legs. The thing I like about his mobility is he sees it and he just goes. He's not running around back there. It's, I'm getting vertical, I'm going north, south, and then I'm going to get down, and I'm going to get my yardage, and I'm going to get down. That's the sort of thing that can really get a young player on the field sooner rather than later. And he's got that. That's going to be, I think, one of the things that's going to probably push him onto the field at the start of the season. Because you can expect, listen, you are going to expect an extra turnover or two here and there and some growing pains with a young quarterback. But when the young quarterback can move a little bit, it does insulate just a little bit from some of the learning curve that you would expect otherwise. Now, I also want to call to attention, they ran more concepts and more complex concepts, more Jimbo Fisher bread and butter complex concepts in the passing game for Francois than they ran for Henry. What happened in the second half when Malik Henry took over at the quarterback position for the Garnet squad, when Henry took over at quarterback, they went to even simpler concepts. They went to that little naked option to that naked boot to Maven Saunders, three times in a row, four or five times out of like five or six play calls, just to get him comfortable and get him into a sort of rhythm. And that's all well and good. But again, against better defenses during the season, you're not going to be able to do some of that stuff. So that's something that they didn't do as much for Francois. They challenged him a little bit more. He went against a little bit more difficult stuff downfield, and they asked him to make some more difficult throws and to deal with a few more difficult concepts in this game. And you can see sort of the difference in how far along these guys are based on what they asked them to do. So keeping that in mind, let's move to talk about Malik Henry. And as much as I really liked what I saw, and there was a lot of good from DeAndre Francois that I saw, Henry is that much better of a talent. No, he does not have the arm strength and even the quickness of release that Francois has. I mean, Francois flicks it, and it's just, I mean, the kid was born to throw. but he does have great hand talent and touch, and he's got more imagination and anticipation to be able to throw guys open. And he's just got this, it's so clear when you watch him play that he's so intuitive. That's the thing that sticks out to me about Malik Henry. Is this is a kid that is very intuitive. He has that point guard thing where the game moves slowly for him and he sees stuff naturally and it just has a natural intuition about, oh, this guy's running this way. This is where I need to put the ball for him to catch it without breaking stride. And he just does it. It's just a very natural thing for him. And, you know, those things stuck out. And honestly, in terms of talent and in terms of what he looks like, he reminds me of a particular great that I'm not even going to mention right now because some of the folks who listen to this podcast or, you know, otherwise will, you know, get all over me, will climb all over me for saying, you're going to bring up that name with this kid? You know, that's unfair. Well, yes, it's unfair, but he does remind me of a particular great in terms of his set of skills and just the intuition that he brings to the game that, you know, the sky's the limit for the kid. He's so cool. He just has a coolness about him and a poise about him that I think is going to make him, even if DeAndre Francois wins the job in 2016 and has a great season, even if Florida State wins the national title with Francois at quarterback in 2016, Henry's going to push to start in 2017. He's going to be, I mean, you're talking about a kid with that kind of potential that he's going to push potentially an incumbent starter with that level, with Francois level talent to get on the field, regardless of what Francois does. That actually makes the decision for Jimbo Fisher a little bit more complicated going into 2016 because, yeah, I mean, Henry's probably not necessarily the best guy for early in the year in 2016, but he, by the end of the year, might be the best guy. And certainly by 2017, he's got the highest ceiling. That said, I think you've got to go with the guy that has the locker room. You've got to go with the guy who's established himself as a leader. You've got to go with the more mature player. You've got to go with, you know, a lot of these things that come into play in addition to just potential, which is why I don't think at this point Malik Henry's going to start or even really play that much as a freshman, though I'm not sure he's going to redshirt. Given what we saw, it's very possible we see him play. I mean, this is a kid that's probably not going to be on campus for 5 years anyway. So, I mean, that is what it is. Francois is not a five-year player either, for what it's worth. But in any case, Henry, in terms of the stats, yes, the stats are good. I mean, that's all well and good. In some respects, what we saw from him, some of the bigger plays were similar to what we saw from DeAndre Johnson last year, running simpler concepts, statistically good. But, you know, the biggest play that he had was a 43-yard touchdown to Rudolph, which was pick the walk on, you know, with the matchup problem and throw it. Which, I mean, shows that the quarterback, you know, shows that he's got a good head to recognize where the mismatch is, and he threw an accurate ball to take advantage of it. But again, you can't make too much of certain things in that regard. And you can't make too much of his stats and numbers at this point being better than Francois's, because if they'd asked him to do the same stuff that they asked Francois to do, I'm not sure that he would have looked quite as good. In fact, I'm pretty certain he wouldn't have looked quite as good because he just doesn't know sort of where he needs to be going on all these things. I mean, there's, as cool as he is, as poised as he is, there's still a certain amount of swimming in the offense that you can see from him right now that, again, over the course of the summer, a lot of that stuff should start to make more sense to him, should get, you know, significant, should make some significant growth. And again, he's going to challenge for the job in the fall. I think, again, at this point, Francois and McGuire are going to have a little bit more trust of their teammates. They're more ready to be leaders and to have, you know, have the locker room at this point. And I think Francois is ultimately going to be that guy. But again, Florida State's in pretty good shape at the quarterback position. pretty far cry from where they were going into last year. That's all I got to say. Now, moving on to the interior, or moving on to the offensive line, defensive line. Again, I mentioned earlier, Wally Aimé was one of the guys that stuck out to me the most. This is a guy who we knew was a big guy. We knew that the staff had been talking about since the recruitment process that this was a guy they expected to be an instant impact guy, a guy that would potentially play right away. But he was better than I expected him to be. And again, there've been whispers coming out of practice. We talked about some of the IMA legends that were already developing in practice, but the guy was better than I expected. The thing that was most impressive to me was when he lined up at that strong side defensive end spot where he was backing up Adam Torres, who actually was a bit disappointing for me. I mean, he's a good sized body, but he's never going to make a difference out there, as far as I can tell, at the defensive end spot. Aimé, on the other hand, he was much more dynamic as an athlete than I expected. Had more bend than I expected him to have, and had more ability to run and again do the dynamic things in space than I expected from a guy who's 6'4", 290. I mean, he's going to be a guy that you can put on the field and get you some pass rush on the inside. He can be a run-stopping body on the outside and still, you know, he had two pass breakups, showed some good instincts for that, still give you some pressure, compressing the pocket and all that. Very, very impressive. This is a guy who's probably not going to be on campus all three of the years that he has left. In terms of eligibility. And you can see why there was such a recruiting battle for him late in the process, because this is a guy that's going to play big minutes and play right away. Really, really impressed by what I saw from Wally Aimé. Another thing that we flagged in terms of the offensive line to watch coming in was the center play. I thought the centers were better than I expected. Now, they had their hands full. Derek Nnadi generally got his, you know, he generally won his matchups and generally got, you know, he ate. He did what he needed to do. DeMarcus Christmas and Fred Jones did what they needed to do. The defensive tackles were generally winning their matchups. But they weren't always winning their matchups. And generally speaking, the offense was more able to get stalemates out of that center position than I expected them to. And against Florida State's defensive tackles, if you're able to get stalemates, you're going to win most of your matchups against other teams. I still think it's a concern going into the fall. The centers need to get, particularly they need to have a really good offseason. They need to get stronger. But it's not as big a concern as it was going into the spring. They had their hands full, but they at least look passable, which is better than what we've seen the last couple of years, with the exception of when Cam Irving moved to center. The guards were also better than I expected. David Robbins was a guy who, you know, he's not outstanding, but he's decent depth. He's a guy I didn't really expect to look as good as he did. Cole Minshew was a guy who, again, he lived up to the mauler reputation that he has. And that was actually, I think, one of the reasons that the gold team ran the football better, is because Minshew was able to win some matchups in the running game as an offensive guard. But he is a little, I think he needs to trim up a little bit, and he whiffed a few times because his range is a little bit limited. Torres actually, you know, he had an Olay block against Torres because Torres just beat him with quickness at one point. And that's, I think, probably why Minshew is not taking that job from Wilson Bell at this point, is because he's just got to get a little bit more mobile. He's got to be a little bit better in terms of not whiffing when he does get his hands on you, he can hurt you. So, you know, but I thought the guards overall were better than I expected. You know, R looked good. You know, I think, you know, Wilson Bell basically looked as he has. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens at that guard spot, but overall looked fine. Rick Leonard looked quite good at right tackle. I mean, he wasn't going against nobody. He was going against scholarship guys. I mean, he was going against Torres, who he handled consistently, and Josh Sweat, who he did reasonably okay against. This is a guy that's going to contend for that starting spot. I think Kelly's probably going to wind up the right tackle, the starting right tackle, after the fall. But Leonard is going to contend. And it'll be interesting to see what happens at left tackle next year if Rod Johnson goes pro as expected. Leonard is going to be a guy that's going to be in the mix to start at one of those tackle positions this year and certainly next year. So, you know, again, a good sign and a move I was skeptical about at the beginning, as you'll recall, but I think has worked out pretty well, it looks like. Now, again, on the flip side, I was a little bit disappointed with what I saw from Adam Torres. Doesn't have a whole lot of explosiveness or bend. He can occupy some blockers. He can, you know, he's going to be a guy that's going to be assignment sound, but he's just not going to create plays, which it's okay. You've got to have guys like that. And he'll be able to take some snaps, but he's not a difference maker at that position, and he's not as good as Rick Leonard was at that position. They are, you know, going to get Ime out there. He's going to get some snaps at that spot, as we saw. And they're also hoping to get something out of one of the freshmen, whether that be Shavar Manuel or J-Rob. Manuel being a little bit more likely at that spot because of how big he is coming in. Be interesting, again, to see what they're able to get there. The third thing, and we're going to go through these last couple things pretty quickly. Linebackers were better, again, than I think most people expected. They were basically matched up with what we'd been told. Matthew Thomas looked outstanding. I actually think he's better in the Jacob Pugh role than Jacob Pugh. But I'm not sure he's going to be in that role all that much, and that position's not going to be on the field as much. But you're looking at a guy that's going to be able to blitz, and you know, he had a couple pressures and a sack coming off the edge. And he's just got such good explosiveness, and he's such a dynamic athlete coming off the edge that I think they may want to get him on the field a little bit more in a pass rush capacity than maybe what they initially thought they might do before, partly because Josh Brown, again, looked good. And he's a guy that looks like you're going to be able to get something out of him as a true freshman at that linebacker spot. And then because Roderick Hoskins showed a lot more range than I thought he had. He's more range than he's shown previously. Looked very good. Very pleased with what I saw from Roderick Hoskins. Linebacker position looks good overall. Disappointing thing there is that Delvin Purifoy, sadly, is just not what he was before the injury. Again, you hope he is able to get back, but at this point just doesn't look like he's quite there. Then you get to the wide receivers. Already talked about Auden Tate. Big target, has stepped up. Campbell had a big catch downfield, albeit against a walk-on. Flashed the athleticism. Some of the big guys that Florida State needs to step up are starting to step up. Tate looks like he's going to be a starter. And if he's able to step up and do anything close to what he did in the spring game next year as the guy opposite Rudolph, then that allows Rudolph to be the Rashad Green opposite the Kelvin Benjamin. That opens the door to everything. For your Travis Rudolph and for some of those other guys. And again, it makes things much easier on a young quarterback to have a big receiver like that. Campbell, again, it does look like he's made some progress. Overall, you know, I think the wide receiver group in general showed nice progress. And that's not even accounting for some of the guys that were out in this game that didn't play. So overall, very, very pleased by what I saw. That said, as I mentioned before, Auden Tate on that big touchdown catch he had over Tavares McFadden, he ran the wrong route. He didn't get the signal, ran the wrong route. That's something where, again, you've got to be able to get the signals, and you've got to be able to consistently be in the right place there. And that's something, again, as a young player, you've got to be able to do just a little bit more that, again, signals where there's still a little bit of room for growth. And again, not getting the signal is a little bit different than getting the signal and running the wrong route. I acknowledge that. But again, that's one of the things that the young wide receivers just have to continue to be consistent. At the running back position, and that was the fifth and final thing that I'd mentioned that we needed to watch in this spring game. Again, I've already mentioned that Ryan Green flashed a lot more power and a lot more, he was a lot more dynamic than I expected him to be. And he gives Florida State a viable backup at that running back spot. And the thing that surprised me is, again, the power that he ran with and the fact that he was the guy that looked like he'd be a good short yardage option. He was hitting the hole with good vision and then driving his legs and running with a purpose, running through some tackles at the line of scrimmage in short yardage. And he did a better job of that than Jacquez Patrick did on short yardage. And Jacquez Patrick, I thought, had a good but not great day. There was one play in particular I'm going to put up a little piece on Noel Digest about before too long, sometime between now and the next podcast release, where I'll show what it is that really is frustrating about Jacquez Patrick and where he can get just a little bit more consistent and turning the football north and south and making sure he gets up the field and runs like a big back. Showed some progress there, still has a little ways to go. But both guys showed progress, and that's what Florida State needed from their running backs this spring. And of course, Jimbo Fisher addressed the situation with Mario Pender. And he said that one of the issues with Pender is that because of all of the stuff that happened last semester, he got a little bit behind in school. So they wanted to make sure that he got that opportunity to get caught up and do all of those things this spring, while he was also getting healthy and recovered, which makes some sense. But they're still hoping that Pender is able to get back, which if they're able to get Pender back as well, and you're able to mix not just Dalvin Cook, but Pender and Ryan Green and Patrick, then you've got four viable backs at that point. And I think that's the minimum that you have to have. And then, of course, you've got the freshman coming in, Rasul, who ran a 10.38 just a little bit, just not that long ago in high school track season, which I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a threat to be a starting kickoff returner from day one, just because of his mix of size and speed. But regardless, they've got some upperclassmen backs now that they can be comfortable with going into the season. And again, we don't know exactly how well Dalvin Cook's shoulder is going to heal, how long it's going to take for that recovery. Again, he's, you know, should be full strength and able to, you know, fully participate in lifts and all that by midsummer. But, you know, if there's something that delays that at all, or if, you know, he gets nicked up or whatever, you got to feel comfortable with Ryan Green as a guy that's going to be able to provide some consistency at that position, and Patrick again has taken some step forward as well. You add Pender to that mix and things look good. A lot of questions left. We're going to address some of those questions in the next podcast. We're already running just a little bit long on this podcast. I'm going to address some of the questions that the spring game brings up and sort of what questions still remain going into the fall. We'll do that while joined by Wayne McGahee III from NoelDigest.com. Lots more to talk about in these days following the Florida State spring game. But that'll do it for us today. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.